Every day I'm hustling. 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 Every day I'm. Every day I'm. Every day I'm hustling.
Hey hustlers, welcome back to Jewels on the Hustle. Oh my gosh, this week's episode guest is one I could have never imagined would be joining me on this podcast, because he is just really exciting and busy person, to say the least. Rick McGuire, the creator and founder of Subway Creatures and What Is New York. If you guys are unfamiliar with his platforms, you must Google him and look him up on Instagram. He has the biggest growing platforms of all things Subway Creatures and the oddities that happen on subways or in New York City. So he is a must follow page and just a great place for a good laugh. And he's so successful, and I just want to pick his brain and learn a thing or two from such a great businessman and entrepreneur, essentially. So I'm just going to stop blabbing and we're going to get right to it, because this guy has a lot of advice and wisdom to shed on all of us. Let's all learn from Rick McGuire. All right, Rick, thank you so much for joining me today. Such an honor to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So first and foremost, you are the creator, the founder of Subway Creatures and What Is New York? Both of those amazing platforms. Where did the idea just come from? I know you were in New Jersey, then you moved to New York and you're like, whoa.
I did. Yeah. There's a lot of misconceptions sometimes. I admit I'm not born and raised in New York, but I've been there for about 12 years now. And I was actually doing the commute every day from New Jersey. I was working in the city, and you know, like most of us New Yorkers, taking the subway and you know, seeing the oddities, some things beautiful, some things not so much. And seeing all this happen, and I just started, you know, very slowly taking videos, taking pictures and sending them to friends and family, because I'm like, oh my God, you guys aren't going to believe this. And, you know, sure enough, you know, as you can imagine, things just started getting annoying. You know, you felt like you were annoying people. So instead, what I decided to do was create a website where I could just put everything on. I'm like, instead of me, you know, bombarding these people with videos and pictures, if they actually want to see it themselves, they can go on the website and check it out. So I started that. And then maybe a year or two later, Instagram came along. I think it was maybe around the end of 2011, 2012. And if you remember, right in the beginning, it was just pictures. So you had to find a way to integrate videos. So that's what the website was for as well. And, you know, then the account just kind of started to take off on its own. I think one of the things that helped is getting on the platform, Instagram early. And then there wasn't really a competition for that type of a thing.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, was there any other account or website or creator that had something similar? So the answer is no.
Not really dedicated to that kind of a thing. I mean, it is a very specific, topic or niche, if you want to call it. So,
about how many New Yorkers there are. I'm surprised not one.
So exactly. And that's why, you know, I was a little surprised that it didn't exist. There just wasn't like a place dedicated to this kind of thing. You know, it's like I thought for sure there'd be something along those lines, and there wasn't. It honestly was just a hobby for me. I was working in television for 10 years, and I never, this was just a thing I did as a hobby. I thought it was amazing to collect these kind of videos and pictures. And, like I said, it kind of started snowballing, where people started sending me stuff instead of me having to aggregate and find it myself.
That's when, you know, you make it, you made it.
It was crazy to me, because I never pictured it as something where, you know, random people, strangers, you know, like I said, in the beginning, it was just friends and family. Now there's strangers sending me stuff. I just never pictured it to that. And then all of a sudden it started getting real big. And I think that's when someone in my family said to me, you know, hey, this kind of seems like it's becoming a thing. You might want to protect it. So that's when, you know, I got the name trademarked and went through the whole copyright thing. And next thing you know, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what was there a tipping point for when, you know, it kind of got so big that you were like, whoa. And it was kind of when I think it was the New York Post maybe did a story on the account. And I was like, okay, if you want to do a story on it, sure. And you know, the news,
I saw that.
Yeah, the news copies each other a lot. So because they did a story, then all of a sudden, there were a bunch of other media outlets that wanted in on it. And it not only it grew the account, but it also gave it a little bit of, I don't know what you want to call it, like authority or like a street cred, because now people are like, whoa, this social media account is now in the news. And, you know, oddly enough, they were also using the page to find news stories. So they, you know, I was getting credit in the news for highlighting, you know, these really crazy videos. So that helped a lot as well.
What came first, the What is New York or the Subway Creatures?
So Subway Creatures came first. That was in 2011, I think it was, as the website, like I mentioned. And then, you know, from, it was actually a few years, I think the What is New York didn't come along until about 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a pretty big gap in there.
Yeah.
But what happened was because of the Subway Creatures page, there were so many people sending me stuff that wasn't in the subway, but it was the same kind of content.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
It only made sense to make an account for New York that didn't involve the subway. And to be honest with you, I tell everyone this, but I feel like the ceiling's higher for that one, obviously, because you're not restricted to just the subway. And it's kind of proven true because that account has grown so quickly. Based on, you know, the content speaks for itself. Yeah. And that one, I honestly feel like will eventually be bigger than the Subway account anyway.
This is so fitting. As we're recording this episode, there's like a ton of like New York City, like sounds going on behind me between like ambulances and buses. Like it truly is never quiet here. So I apologize for all the noise. I don't know if you can hear.
No, listen, I honestly, I can't right now, but that's, okay. That's so typical for like, yeah, of New York. So it's not a surprise anyway. It'd be weird if there weren't noises.
Exactly. Then you'd be like, what's going on here?
Right.
Was there ever like a specific moment when you were riding the subway and you're like, oh my gosh, like, aha, like this is a great idea. It's going to like, you know, was there a moment or something that just kind of grew?
It did. It was more of a growing thing. However, I think it was the name. When I thought of the name, that really kind of popped, and that was the no-brainer. And I've had a lot of people kind of mention to me down the road, they were like, you know, the name just sounds so perfect for what it is.
Yeah, it really is.
And I think that, you know, again, another misconception is the connotation that comes with it, because a lot of people think that it's, and rightfully so, that it has a lot of negative connotation. And I was worried about that because the point of the account is really to kind of celebrate the uniqueness of New York and the subway. And it's not all, even though a lot of it is, you know, the oddities of New York, it's also, there's a lot of beautiful things that happen. You find a lot of subway performers who are, you know, amazing. There's a lot of moments that happen on the subway. You know, just one right off the top of my head that I can remember, you know, there's this really awesome video of, you know, a guy on his phone, and there's a little black boy sitting next to him who's just staring at his phone, like over his shoulder. So the guy just gives him his phone and lets him play whatever game he was playing. And for whatever reason, this was being recorded, but you know, it's like moments like that where you're like, these people don't even know each other. They're just strangers and they're having this kind of an interaction on the subway. So, you know, there are those kind of, quote unquote, New York moments, if you want to call them that. But, There's a lot of beautiful things that happen, as well as wholesome.
Yeah.
So I don't want it all to just be lumped in together like Subway Creatures is a negative thing. There are those moments where you're like, oh, it's so refreshing to see these type of wholesome moments.
Yeah, it kind of shows unity. I mean, it's no secret that the media loves to show the bad stuff that happens and like the negative stuff. So while yes, there's some weird oddities that happen on the subway, like
there's also moments where people are united. I'm not gonna lie, when I first saw the word subway creatures, I thought it would be like things you find on the subway, like little animals or rodents or like bugs. And I was like, oh, like, because that's actually a thing too.
oh, it definitely is. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And you know, the thing with the name, I always tried to think of, you know, and this is kind of maybe a weird way of looking at it, but if you're going through like a TV guide and you're scrolling down and you have no idea what something is, but it says subway creatures, it's gonna, I wanted it to be something where it would make you click on that regardless of whether you know what it is or not, because you're intrigued by the name alone.
There and you go.
I think that kind of hits a little bit because people might scroll by and just like you just mentioned, see a name like that and they're like, I need to know more about what this is. And that I think also helps a lot, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So the name is huge because like just from that, you want to click it and see what that's about. Now that's a really good point. And that came to you. So you came up with that, which is really awesome. The beginning of any creation or idea or business is always, I mean, not, it could be the hardest. I'd say it is one of the hardest. How did you kind of deal or handle adversity or doubt in the beginning when you were unsure about things?
Yeah, there was, first of all, I was lucky enough to, like I mentioned, have this as a hobby. So I did have a job in the meantime. There was a point where I had to kind of roll the dice, if you want to call it that, and take a chance. And that was very scary. Especially living in New York City, because you're wondering how you're, you know, going to pay the bills.
Pay your rent, yeah.
Yeah, you got rent to pay, man. You got to put food on the table, and right. You know, I wasn't completely sure how that was going to happen, but at the same time, you know, I saw this as more than just an Instagram account. But to dig a little deeper into your question, in the beginning, there was a lot of trial and error using this. And I know that sounds dumb with a social media account, but when you're trying to build a brand, which is what I at some point eventually looked at this as, I looked at this as more than just a hobby.
100%. It's a brand.
When,
oh,
right.
Yeah.
When it crossed a certain threshold, I think I was like, okay, you know, when you have this many eyes on something and you start having brands and companies reaching out to you who want to utilize your audience, I think you do have to start looking that way. The problem that I had found out in the beginning was, you know, you don't want to exploit people in a negative way. And I think that what I was doing in the beginning, I was just documenting everything that I saw, whether that meant, you know, people who were less fortunate, who may have been homeless. There's a lot of mental illness in New York.
Oh yeah.
You really, though, in the beginning, I was just posting anything, anything that looked interesting or anything that I thought may grab some traction on social media. And, you know, that's not a good way to start off building a brand. And I learned that early. I learned that, you know, you got to go for the people who are trying to kind of do something to be in the forefront of what you're seeing. Because those are the people that, you know, they're doing this for a reason, and less of the people who are maybe caught in a bad moment. There are going to be times where that happens, but there was a lot of trial and error finding out what works with your audience. What do they like? What really works? What doesn't? And listen, we live in a day and age where you are going to have haters, you're going to have trolls, you're going to have people who are going to have a very strong opinion on things, no matter what. There's no such thing. I can post the most wholesome video. I mean, it could be a little baby petting a puppy on the train, and someone will either turn it into politics, turn it into race, turn it into anything that may split an audience up.
And unfortunately,
exactly. It's the time you live in, and it's going to happen, especially when you have a following as large as mine.
Right.
You're just not going to be able to avoid it. So it's kind of, you just have to make the best of it, unfortunately. But that there was a lot of trial and error with that type of stuff early in the beginning, which, you know, you mentioned, you know, what were some of the problems I was running into? And that was one of the biggest ones.
So trial and error, that is definitely one that I try to use, and I think a lot of people should use. That makes a lot of sense. So you said the first step to creating Subway Creatures was through your website, right? And then it went on to the social media platforms.
Right.
Right. So what was, I guess, your approach to marketing? Like maybe in the beginning, you said trial and error on Instagram, but did you have any other methods you like to use?
To be honest with you, and this was one of the things that I thought was pretty crazy about the account itself, there wasn't a whole lot of marketing needed. It was a lot of word of mouth. It was also a lot of, you know, reaching out to some of the larger accounts or similar accounts. And if they are using your content, you know, just kind of nudge them a little bit and say, hey, you know, these, I know that you got these off of my page because, you know, no one else had these. Give me credit. And a lot of them actually did. This was also around the time where a lot of accounts were getting called out for not crediting, you know, comedians. And, you know, there was that time where, you know, people were stealing content. And, you know, social media, I totally get it. You know, there's a lot of reposting. There's a lot of, you know, sharing memes and that stuff's going to happen. But when you have such specific content, I know that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, where it's coming from. So there was a lot of that. I myself didn't have to do a lot of marketing, which was, you know, very surprising. I never really spent a lot of money on the accounts, fortunately. It was more of a word of mouth. And like I said, when you have like the media reposting and crediting you, it really goes a long way.
Wow. Yeah. Spot on. So one thing I was thinking of, was there ever a time where, because you said you were recording everything in the beginning, was there ever a point where someone was like, why are you recording me? Put your phone down. Do you have to get permission to post of these people?
So there are moments where people will find themselves on the account. They will ask sometimes to get it taken down. You know, it's a case by case scenario. In New York, you are kind of risking your life when you point a camera at someone. yeah. Trust me, I have a lot of people who submit content to me who are like, I really hope you use this because I risked my life taking this.
Oh my gosh.
You know, because wow. It's New York, yeah. And you never know what's going to happen. I did have, one situation where this wasn't in the subway. This was in my first year in New York too. This was back in maybe 2009, 2010. And there was a man walking down the street, on like a Friday night in a wedding dress. And, you know, it was one of those things where I guess it's not that big of a surprise in New York City, especially in the Hell's Kitchen area to see that. But I was thinking no one's going to believe that I'm seeing this right now. So I took out my camera. I was trying to be a little conspicuous, but clearly he saw me and he actually walked over and he had a purse that he just started beating me with.
No.
And you know, it was a bad look for me because in a way it looked like I was, I guess, harassing him and, you know.
Okay. Yeah. You know, or York, some phobia of like.
Yeah, of course. You know, yeah. there was a part of me that was like, listen, you're the one walking down the streets of New York in a wedding dress. Like how are you shocked that someone's filming you? But at the same time, I think that there's this part of New York where people feel comfortable doing that because that is kind of, I don't want to say a natural thing, but it's just not as surprising as it would be somewhere else.
Yeah. New York thrives on their like freedom of expression and expressing yourself. And it's totally accepted. And it's like, if you have a problem with it, then that's your problem kind of thing.
Of course. So I think you could kind of see both sides with that, but in the long run, how I, you know, am able to do what I do, you know, when you are in the public, there's no expectation of privacy. So, you know, there's really, it's especially in the subway or on the streets of New York, you know, you really, you can't get away with, you know, especially in 2000, you know.
Yeah, you have to kind of expect that someone's going to point a camera at you.
Listen, there's homeless people with camera phones now. Like, it's, yeah. You see them charging their phones at the charging stations all the time. Yep. Everyone has a phone. So it's, you know, it's like it's a huge Black Mirror episode. You know, it's just really the way it is. So, you know, that's just kind of the world we live in now. And you know, that's the legal side of things.
So I read in one of the press releases that you did get hacked.
Yes. That was a very scary time, because that was actually right when I was trying to make the transformation, move everything over to making this a legit company.
Wow.
Put
aside your other careers and make this your main focus. Is that what you mean?
Right, exactly. And I think at the time I had I was close to 600,000 followers, which, you know, I couldn't even imagine that the account was that big at the time. To this day, I still don't necessarily know how it happened, but, you know, that was I cried the day that it went away, because, you know, it's something I had put so much time into and had built. It was, I still to this day consider it, you know, my baby. And this
of course.
Is, and, you know, so I thought it was all gone. I was like, I'm going to have to start over. I don't even know if I can at this point. It was just a very scary situation. But luckily enough, the hacker, instead of just wiping the account, they decided to run it as if they were the owners, which actually worked out for me, because if they did just wipe it and it was gone, there probably wouldn't have been any way of getting it back. But the fact that they decided to run it, because I think their end goal was they were trying to sell the account on the black market. And, you know, they had that big of a following. Someone was going to pay top dollar for it. And the fact that they kept the account alive and running it, Instagram was able to go in and get it back for me. But it was not an easy process at all. So thank God that happened. But that could have been really bad.
So they were adding videos and keeping the account going like that, you mean?
Yeah. And it was actually, I was really impressed. So, you know, I'm sitting here having to watch someone else run my account, really tough. But, you know, what I was really flattered by was not only were like the videos they were posting and the captions that they were putting, people who I didn't even know, I could see in the comment section, we're saying like, did someone like take over this account? Like this doesn't seem like the same voice as the person. And it really it made me feel so good. It's like, people are actually paying attention to this type of stuff. You know, the one thing I've never really done is, you know, put my face in front of the account. I've always wanted both accounts to be what it is. I don't want it to be Rick McGuire presents Subway Creatures. I wanted Subway Creatures to be, you know, what it is. And that's the people who make up, you know, not only New York, but Subway's everywhere. And same for What Is New York, you know, it's not about me. But that being said, people were taking notice that there seemed to be some kind of shift.
No, like, what kind of shift do you think they were seeing? I mean, it's a video of a subway or things, oddities happening in the city. What could they notice?
That's different? I think it was
the caption.
I think it was a content thing. They noticed that the videos weren't as, I'm very specific with stuff. I try to curate content to make it, you know, very specific stuff that and I've been doing this for so long that I really think that I'm good at finding what is going to really resonate with people. And this person was just posting almost anything that they were finding. Like, it wasn't necessarily even funny stuff. The captions were, you know, instead of it being, you know, like a funny caption or something like that, they were saying, you know, tag three friends. It was just like one of those things where it was like gimmicky. And I think people were, there was also maybe like a week or two where the account was completely dark, where no one had been posting. And then all of a sudden someone's, you know, the account comes back. They changed the name. They changed the name to Subway Madness instead of Subway Creatures.
Oh, that doesn't stick as well. No.
It doesn't, but I think their point of that was because the name was trademarked, that was going to be a way that the account was going to get shut down because they were using a trademarked account. So they changed the name so that way there wouldn't be any legal issues. And you know, it kind of worked against them, but thank God it did.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How many submissions do you think you get on average per day?
So, prior to COVID,
That's my next question.
Prior to COVID, it was in just for Subway Creatures alone. It was in the hundreds. Oh. So it was a huge task going through content. Then COVID hit.
How did COVID impact Subway Creatures? What is New York?
That was a really scary time. Especially when you're running an account like that and the Subway, you know, is all of a sudden completely, you know, desolate. It went from hundreds of submissions a day to literally that first week of quarantine, I was getting like one or two a day.
It was really scary
because there was no light at the end of the tunnel at the beginning of quarantine. You were like, how long is this going to last? And you realized that no one was on the subway, obviously, because no one really knew the severity of the virus. So no one wanted to take any chances. So it was pretty much essential workers and MTA workers who were the only ones riding the subway, which took, you know, everyone out. That obviously played a huge role. It was scary. So, you know, you wind up having to dig into your archives and start posting content that was, you know, old or outdated.
Yeah, luckily you have so many archive probably.
I do, but you know what happened is then all of a sudden now you're facing all the people who are like, why is no one wearing masks in these videos?
And
you're
good point.
So all of a sudden I had to start dating videos and like literally putting dates on when the videos were from.
That's acceptable. I mean, people know, like they knew we were in a pandemic. Right, things were slow. That's acceptable.
You know, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of people who don't understand, you know, that I could have videos from, you know, they take things for what they are and they're like, this is happening right now. Also, why are there so many people in the subway right now with a pandemic going on? And I'm like, okay, this is rush hour from, you know, 3 months ago. That's not the case. The pandemic has 100% affected, you know, what I have going on. It's still not back to normal. I would say it definitely is getting better. I think it was just last night they announced that they're not doing the 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. shutdowns anymore. It's now going to be, I think, like maybe 2 to 4, something along those lines. But it's slowly going back.
A little better.
I think the biggest thing that affected me, which was a big part of my income, I was doing pop-up shows in the subway for musicians. So we did one with Hozier. We did one with, you know, a bunch of country singers. You know, some big names, a lot of small names as well, but we were just doing, you know, we would go down, they'd play 1 to 3 songs. And, you know, that was going really well. It was basically to promote new albums and they were coming out. And obviously all of a sudden, you know, the pandemic comes along and you can't do those. Hopefully those will start up again soon. But you gotta just think about everyone's safety with these types of things. And, you know, I can't be the one responsible if, you know, we were to go down and do a pop-up show and then all of a sudden, you know, people are getting sick and all of a sudden you're patient zero all over again with like a third wave. You know, you don't want to be that guy. So, you know, you gotta make sure you do it in a safe manner. And, you know, I just, whatever quote unquote normal means, I can't wait for that to happen.
Have you ever had a professional tennis player play tennis on the subway?
No, you know what? We should do that.
Oh, you know, that's why I was smiling while you were talking about a pandemic. I just, the idea hit, that's probably why she's smiling, but I just had a vision of, you know, volleying back and forth to another tennis player on the subway and just like having everyone get excited.
Maybe
like,
platform across the tracks. See how you guys can keep that going.
I can do that. How does that sound?
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out for sure.
Okay, because I would, I like compete. I tour around the world, I've played the US Open, Australian Open. So I can obviously hold my own. I'll find a partner.
No, for sure. We got to find a way to like make it interesting, a little more than just volleying between the, mm-hmm. you know, the platforms. But there could be a way to get that going and do it so no one's like diving onto the tracks. But
oh geez,
there's definitely potential there.
We'll have to discuss it. Yeah, yep. We'll talk about it after the podcast. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Was there ever a moment where you were like, I better start coming up with a backup plan with the COVID, or you're committed to this project, committed to this?
Yeah.
There's no backup plan, I guess.
You know, there were ways that, I was actually during the pandemic trying to use the platform to do good. There were obviously so many people in need. One thing that we did do, I collaborated with an artist to create, we took the I Love New York symbol, you know, the I Heart New York.
Yeah, you put the mask.
We replaced it with a mask, and yep. And it, we called it I Protect New York. And, you know, we sold that as merchandise and made zero money that we kept. We donated, I want to say it was maybe around $12,000 to the COVID relief fund to try and help people in New York. You know, that so many people, and this is what makes New York amazing. So many people were stepping up, you know, during that time, trying to help, you know, so many companies I was working with who were, if you remember, there was a PPE or a mask shortage. And, yeah. You know, there are companies that stopped down who don't even make masks, and they started making masks just to donate. I think a lot of people were just trying to help in whatever way. Another one that we tried to do was we made these subway illustrations, basically, of, you know, all the stuff that you see. This really talented illustrator, David Rigoni, I worked with him to. We were originally selling those before the pandemic. And what we decided to do was start handing out some of those illustrations that don't even have color. So people could use them as like coloring books, because there were so many, you know, a lot of people who are stuck in quarantine, you know, there's this mental health crisis all of a sudden of people going crazy in their apartments. And, you know, that's one therapeutic way of dealing with this. And if that was something as small as we could do to help in that, you know, we were trying to do something along those lines as well. You know, so there were a lot of ways trying to help. I will say the What is New York page really took off during that time. Again, because of quarantine, so many people were tuning into that page because that was a way of them kind of seeing what was going on outside of their apartment. And as soon as the weather started getting a little better, a lot of people started venturing out into their rooftops or the parks, and the content just started pouring in for that page. And you know, people were actually using the page as a way of kind of seeing what was going on outside their apartment. And you know, the news, all the news was covering was COVID-19 and Trump for the entire pandemic. So, you know, this was basically a way of, you know, what's going on other than COVID-19 and Trump, you know, at this time. And you know, I think people kind of appreciated it. So that really helped that page a lot. And that was, if you want to call it a fallback, that was kind of a fallback plan for me at the time.
Sounds like it was more of an adjustment, and hustlers actually adjust.
That's a great way of putting it. It was an adjustment. Yeah.
That wasn't even a fallback. That was just a tweak to help mm-hmm. you cope with what you, and it was actually very smart because you used it to your advantage. So I think that's huge. On this podcast, we like to discuss, you know, the hustle and the why behind what you do. And I mean, it's very clear here. You know, before Subway Creatures and What is New York, You know, you were a relatively normal person, I'd assume. Now,
still
you know,
am. Still am.
Still yeah. am, of course. Oh, still yeah. are, of course. But now you have a bigger platform. Do you feel like, you know, since you got the blue check and the bigger platform, your treatment has been different? Of course, there's probably more attention on you.
There definitely is. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people in the industry that I work in who, you know, I think that there's sometimes negative connotation with the word influencer, because they just look at it as, you know, the
selling,
people who,
yeah, selling the product, the skincare. People
who are, exactly. And, you know, here, have my herbal tea, and, you know, the people who are dancing in front of ring lights, you know,
yes.
You know, I think that there's, you know, that negative connotation, but you can't deny when you have, you know, 2 million followers on one platform and, you know, a little over 500,000 on another, you have influence. And I think, it's really important to not only use that influence for good when you can, just like, you know, I tried to do during the pandemic, but also you have to be responsible with what you're posting and what you're saying. Because again, another thing that I learned through the process, there are a lot of people that don't know that, you know, there's one guy behind the scenes. Because of the blue check, it's a little misleading sometimes. They think that, you know, even though I am verified, they think that anything I say is like news, and they take it for what it is.
Okay. And
so when if I were to say something, they take that as this is a thing and this is real. Whereas I might say it tongue in cheek, it might be a joke, I might be sarcastic. You have to be really careful because there, you have to understand there's a lot of people on all the social media platforms who, you know, there's a running joke where they just read the headlines and that's all they go off of. They don't look into anything. They don't research anything. I have a lot of relatives, you know, who are obviously in an older demographic, but they literally, they don't look at the websites that they're getting stuff off of. So they see an article who could be, it could be a blog from, and it could be a 15-year-old kid writing that blog, and they'll start reposting that on social media as if that's news. And it could be some kind of like .net website that, you know, is not credible at all. It just was a link that got forwarded to them from someone else. There are people that are going to take that as news. So, you know, my point to that whole thing is, you know, when someone sees an account like the ones I have, they might actually think that, you know, that's coming from a credible source. And not to say that I'm not, but I could say whatever I want on that platform. There's no one there to kind of regulate what I'm doing. So you have to be really cautious because people are going to take that for what it is. And there's a responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah, that's spot on. There's something called clickbait. People put these catchy headlines where they make you want to click them, kind of like Subway Creatures. You're like, I want to click that and see what that's about. Right. The other day, even with the COVID vaccine, there was a headline that said like 75-year-old dies after getting COVID vaccine, but you have to read the article and read that it's not actually from the vaccine. He had these other illnesses that, you know, really were the reason. So that is so true about having to read past the headline. You know, the headline is there to grab your attention.
Of course.
And it's not to just read it and stop.
So many people, you know, don't do that. And, you know, that plays a big role in, you know, why, you know, the country's so split right now. And then you know, that's a whole nother podcast, but you know, there is that documentary Social Dilemma, which is scary because, you know, you do have these algorithms that are showing people only specific content. They're not showing them everything. And what it's doing is it's forming these behaviors from people and it's forming opinions for them. They're not forming their own. And it's very scary sometimes to think about that. That's where all of this is going.
And it's not, the problem is that people, including us, we spend like, there's a stat that says you spend like 6 to 8 seconds scrolling through. So you're obviously going to want to put something.
That's even long.
That's long, right? Yeah. It's less, maybe like two, 3 seconds.
It's usually three. I mean, you know, from my experience and I've done a lot of research and studying on this type of thing because again, it's along lines of work. But it's honestly, you have 3 seconds to get your point across before someone's going to scroll and it's 2 to 3. You really have to grab their attention immediately, whether that's aesthetically or whether you're going to present some kind of fact or whatever it is. The content needs to get its point across in 3 seconds or at least drag them into whatever it is you want them to see, which is very hard to do.
Well, that's a marketing tool right there, you know, for growing your platform, absolutely, knowing that you have to kind of hit people right away.
There's a science to it. There really is. There's a science to it. And if you don't do that, you know, there's so many examples of people being able to draw that in. you know, it's really interesting stuff, but it's also very hard to do.
Yeah. Mm. Very true. The last question I'm going to ask you is there anything, like, clearly you know what you're doing, but is there anything you would like to change or you wish you, well, let's say, is there anything right now you'd like to change about either platform?
As far as changing,
tweak, as we like to say, adjust.
Yeah, right. That's a good industry word for me. Right now, it's different. It's a different time, obviously, you know, because like we mentioned before, everyone has cameras these days. And for me, that's so important. One thing I would definitely like to tweak and change for mine is original content. And that's something that is a goal for me in 2021. Right now, I primarily use what they call UGC, user generated content, which is all the people that submit videos to me. I really want to get into original content. I strongly feel like there's so many untold stories in New York that I want to be able to tell using these large platforms. Whether it's for the good or whether it's just human interest stories or whether it's just something that's really interesting, there's so much potential and there's so much that, you know, New York City has to offer. That I feel like it's not even, we haven't even scratched the surface on. There is that account Humans of New York that, you know, a lot of people follow where it just basically walks up to a random stranger and says, hey, tell me your story. There's so many like that, but you can really do a deep dive into it. I would love to do something like that. And that's kind of in the works and in the plans right now, to do more content where, I'm not just using other people's videos, which I'll still probably always do that because that's you know what made the accounts what they are today.
Yeah.
But I think doing a deeper dive into some of these stories and being able to tell them is definitely something that I want to get into this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like I was trying to, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of like besides the line you came up with, creatures of, wait, what was the one about the New Yorkers, but that you were just saying? Humans of New York.
It's kind of like of New York. Yeah,
behind,
yeah.
I don't know, my brain was looking for a different name for it for you, but that's awesome. I mean, I personally learned so much and I'm sure anyone listening will learn so much. It's so nice to like talk to someone so successful and kind of pick their brain a bit. So thank you for letting me do that.
No, absolutely. I hope this was like a little, different from what you usually talk about. Cause I know the topic is always different because, you know, when you start talking about, you know, creatures and New York and all that. So hopefully it was a little different, but at the same time hit the topic for you.
So that was Rick McGuire. I hope you guys learned a thing or two from him the way I definitely did. It's just so interesting to see that readers, viewers, listeners, they kind of give it like 3 seconds. And if they're not just like amazed by what they're seeing, reading, they will click off onto something else. That just like really shows you how like our attention spans are so short and how we really are just looking to get just mind blown by what we're reading in order to stay on it. On top of that, how incredible with the I Protect New York sweatshirts. I think that is genius. He could have really found himself in a bad position with COVID and his business, relying on people to send in videos of things that happened in New York during a lockdown. He twisted it and used it to his advantage in a way where he's benefiting, you know, the community, the New York, and just making a difference. So that is great. So I learned so much from him. What was your favorite thing? Because I think we're all trying to grow. And there's a statistic that, I forget the exact statistic, but so many people would gladly give up their jobs to be able to be their own boss if it meant avoiding a toxic work environment or profiting from a hobby. So again, kudos to Rick for really taking advantage of his skills and his passion. And as always, guys, follow me at Jules on the Hustle podcast for my Instagram content. There's so much more in addition to what you hear here. And if you enjoyed this, please rate and review the podcast. There'll be a lot of awesome guests coming up. We'll see you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle.
Every day I'm hustling, 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 every day I'm hustling.